Welcome to season 21 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm excited you're here. Season 21 moving right along. And this week you're in for a real treat because my friend Mike Vacanti joined the show. He came in person in Charlotte, and then we did a LinkedIn Live afterwards. So we're trying to do both. If we have an in-person show, we then do a LinkedIn Live for 20 or 30 minutes. And so if you were able to see that, that was a couple weeks ago, and then now is the full interview. So if you're not already following on LinkedIn, make sure you do that. You can get all the updates on the LinkedIn Live. We're trying to do more of that to help you on your journey. But if you haven't, you're in for a real treat today because Mike really delivered in a big way. If you wait till the very end of the show, I think Mike gives one of the best pieces of advice anybody can hear, particularly when hiring, when looking for a leader. So often he talks about how job interviews and job applications, they look for management qualities, not leadership qualities. And he gives just phenomenal advice for a great question to ask to identify if someone is a real leader or not. And so I think if you hang around to the end, you'll get some incredible value from this show. Before we jump into the show, just really briefly, I had so many messages. I participated in the North Carolina Amateur Golf Tournament last weekend, and I was fortunate enough to win. 36 years old, it was phenomenal. And I really had a blast. I got so many messages on Instagram and LinkedIn from people that saw that. And so very grateful for that, very humbled by being able to do that at my age. And God is good, man. He gives us many talents in different areas of life, and certainly one I was excited about. So if you did that, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Now, this show is absolutely packed, so let's not waste any more time with my conversation with Mike Vacanti.
Well, Mike, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, John, I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
You know, there was many things that had me gravitate towards your message, but maybe none more than this idea that you're in the human business. You care about human beings.
Yeah, I deeply care about relationships and people in my life.
Why do you think it's so important in organizations today, not just on the personal side?
My experience has brought me to that place, John. We go through different stages in our life and have different beliefs on that. And, you know, are we leveraging people and extracting value? Are we creating value with people? And through my career, through my business experiences, I realized that if I can help other people envision and set a path for their personal goals, that they'll do amazing things. And the leadership role to that was keeping everything in alignment. It's kind of head up and eyes forward, not push backwards and pressure down. And it when I found my greatest enjoyment in business is the relationships and the engagement, and to see people light up when they work and when they discover, that's what stayed with me the most and has become most important to me at this stage
in your career. Yeah. That sounds great. You know, I mean, it sounds phenomenal. Let people light up, help them become the best version of themselves. It's a warm and fuzzy feeling inside.
Yes.
Most organizations are not run that way, are they?
No. It's amazing. I mean, I've been set aside at a rewards trip, you know, holding the nice trophy, big bonus check in the bank, and celebrating the success of the year. And I was told, hey, you have to throw away that touchy-feely stuff and become more like us. This is the way we look and act and operate in this business. I think there's, and that wasn't very long ago, it's within the decade here. So I think there's still a big resistance to it. And that's part of doing this work in allowing all of us to explore that mindset. How do we get stuck there, and how do we get out of it?
Well, you know, I think the natural question is, but why do they? Why is the resistance to the human element, to being a human being, to caring about each other, to elevating each other, to, and I don't mean just enabling, I mean really thinking about the human being in all of this. Why is there such resistance to that thinking? I mean, is there an ROI negative to it? Is it a, we've always done it this way? What do you believe is what holds most organizations back, or HR departments back, from focusing on the human element, which is their most important resource, which is their people?
Right. In large corporations, John, my experience says, and the conversations that I get to have now, it's still a response to pressure. It's a poor response to pressure. So we have, you know, immediate quarterly pressures, and that just gets forced down to everybody in the company and doesn't allow for contemplation and good thinking and new programs. There's always that weekly pressure, monthly pressure, quarterly pressure.
What have you done for me lately?
To get something done. And it's in response to the outside market pressures, whether it be investors or clients. And I think that over the three industrial revolutions or whatever in the last 100 years, right, we've become so great at, I mean, we're brilliant, right? Human beings are brilliant. Orchestration, process, systems, and then look at the technologies we've built, and we found better ways to do most things. And I think what we forgot is, what is that doing to the people? And what we're finding is there are a lot of wellness ramifications. You know, there's mental and physical health ramifications that, I mean, the numbers say it. It's a $600 billion a year cost. And if you take out the worker productivity, it gets over $1 trillion of negative impact on the bottom line, mm-hmm. because we're not taking care of the human beings that are doing the work.
I have a good friend who works at a large company, and he said something to me that really struck at me, and I want to get your take on it. He said, it's amazing how much we care what everybody else thinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we look perfect.
Right.
We know we're, as human beings, we're flawed. You know, we're not perfect. Nobody is. Organizations are the same way. Does an organization wanting to be perfect, or having a perfect, you know, left to right chart of growth, does that idea of perfection hurt the human element, or does it matter?
Yeah, you know, it's taking really two realms there, right? So the corporate entity, or the corporate brand, if you mm-hmm. will, and then the humanity inside of that. And I think sometimes we don't do a good job of combining those. It depends on the leadership. Mm-hmm. It depends on the culture. But I think how well those are pulled together, John, is probably a great definition of culture. And yes, the focus on the outside appearance, or let's just call it the ring of circumstances, right? We're always looking outside of ourselves. Companies are looking outside of themselves, the culture or the brand of that company. How do we look out in the circumstances that we experience? It's hard to look inside. It takes humility. We have to find our flaws, accept our brokenness, to want to heal that and to do better. And when we look from a corporate entity inside,
I would add courage.
Courage is,
I mean, yes. You know, just to look inside, not only take the humility to do it, but to have courage to do it. You know, to have the definition of courage is to be scared of something and deciding to do it anyways. It's scary to look inside, isn't it?
It's scary to look inside. I mean, even in our personal lives, mm-hmm. if we want to continue on a growth path, we have to go back and do the deep internal work. Mm-hmm. Or we don't know where we're growing to. And, you know, I often say, where do we grow from here? Stop going, stop doing, plan, be thoughtful, and do more human being rather than human doing. And it is those pauses, and it is that reflection, I think, lets us go faster into the turmoil that we're bound to face. And turmoil right now in a business sense, there's a lot of that, but, you know, life is a kind of a bumpy road, right? There's some turns that we don't expect.
More than a few. I've heard you say something that really resonated with me, and I want you to kind of unpack it or talk about it a little bit. You said you really feel like we're at a point where we're squeezing the capacity out of people. I'm really fascinated by those words, organizations or people, or squeezing the capacity out of people. What does that mean?
Yeah. So if I was just to, the switch that I would flip on that for clarity is are we extracting value from that worker, or are we creating value with that worker? And the worker's a human being, right? But when we come to work, we're trading our time for a paycheck. And then all of the other stuff wraps around that. And that's fair enough, right? That is the transaction side of it. I think over time, there's been more pressure to do more. I think coming out of, you know, just 10 years ago, coming out of the recession, put more pressure on workers. And people were willing to go back to work for a lot less and do a lot more than before. Budgets were tight. And we go through those changes or those inflection points, I think we land on kind of a comfortable belief that we can keep demanding more of people. 60, 70, 80 hours is now a badge of honor. And can't you hustle? And why don't you own that? And, you know, it's a sense of achievement. And there's a cost to that. There's a cost to that.
What's the cost?
Well, I think that's why I say we've squeezed the capacity out of people. At what point is there no longer alignment to the other areas we need in our life? If I'm going that fast in business, do I have enough time for relationships that matter? With family, with friends? I don't use the word work-life balance because I don't really know what that is, and it would be different for you than it is for me. It's not the scales of justice, right? They don't equal anything. But if I get to choose and align my work, I am if I choose to work a number of hours or put intense effort in at times, I get to make that choice. I'm getting satisfaction out of that. But to turn around and shame or demand that out of the person next to me that needs more alignment, that needs a little bit more outside of work time, then I have to learn to accept that and actually support that. Because when we're together doing work, I need them to be their best. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part we really miss. From a societal standpoint, or not societal, I don't want to go there. I want to stay in the work zone. So, in a corporate environment, it really depends on what is the example we follow. And when I say squeeze capacity out of people, I'm just looking at the results, John. Engagement, although we spend $1 billion a year on engagement programs, it continues to decline. So we found the budget, but we haven't found the answer. And when I look at the, you know, again, those medical costs, and then just the mental and physical health. And so since I started doing this Humans First Club work in the last 7 months, traveling around with groups of people in different cities across the country, opening up a place to have this dialogue and hearing some true stories and watching people just take the shields down and share, it's been quite amazing. But the stories I've heard have really stopped me in my tracks. I knew that there were issues. I believed it could be better. I did not know there were so many stories out there who people that have reached the breaking point and, you know, been forced out on leave or forced into the hospital or had really dramatic life events take place because of that pressure at work. And so if we've lost the hearts and minds of our people, it's not that, gee, these millennials are soft. It's like, okay, first of all, stop picking on my kids. Like that doesn't work for me. And secondly, I think they might actually have a better answer is I'm not putting up with that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sacrifice something to go get more of what I want. However, if you let me align and you bring me the opportunities and you let me become more of myself and I see growth, you got me. I'm going to go with you. And I think we all have something to learn from that mentality.
I agree. I think it's a really fascinating point. Even just that visual, like just feeling like you're going to, you're going to squeeze them or the person as much as you possibly can during that pay period, and then it fills back up. And then you're going to squeeze them again until the next pay period. And it's an interesting visual as a boss, right? It's an interesting visual as a leader, which is, in many ways, you should think that they start empty and you're going to fill them up until the next pay period, right? And then they automatically go down. And your job is to fill that thing up until the next pay period versus feeling like because you're paying them, they owe you.
Yes.
You know, and it's kind of an old school mentality in a way. And yes, there are realities to life and there's realities to business and making numbers and driving performance. I don't think anybody's saying we don't need to perform.
No.
Yeah. And if anything, the opposite.
And it's interesting, John, because, you know, a lot of the people that I've got to meet and I'm kind of sharing this journey with or walking shoulder to shoulder in this journey, I love their message. We talk about purpose. We talk about, you know, bringing humanity into the workplace. And often they'll say people over profits or purpose over profits. And I support their message and I appreciate their point of view. My experience says, given the opportunity, people will amaze you. And if you want to grow your business beyond where you have projected today, building people up, allowing them to operate out of belief is going to give you better returns than you could orchestrate or force yourself. I've been through 5 mergers and acquisitions, jumping into teams where I'm the enemy, right? It's just like I'm the executive that got placed in, you know, with the responsibility. People are operating in a chaotic situation through mergers and acquisitions. They're dealing with fear and doubt is kind of the start point for every day. And now you throw in this new person. And what I watched happen is focusing on them, helping them understanding their perspective and allowing them to align to where we're trying to go. They ended up surprising me and doing amazing things. And in every case, those teams beat the number. They made it look easy. We did a lot of work, but because they believed in where we were going and taking the risks to get there, they ended up doing better than projected.
It's a fascinating thought that, you know, people are capable of so much if we allow them, if we inspire them to be it and to do it. And, you know, are they always going to do things to your level of perfection? No.
Right.
Are they always going to do it your way? No. I can assure you of that. But you're so much more powerful when everybody's running at full capacity, aren't you? yes. and at their full potential, versus you feeling like they only can run at 50% of you.
Yes.
It's an interesting concept, and it's a real challenge for any leader listening, which is don't limit your team. Don't limit your team. And so many managers do.
Yes. And I think that limiting isn't an intentional thing, right?
Yeah, it's not like hey, I'm going to try to hold you back.
Yeah, we run 5-minute miles here, right? I don't want under 5, and I don't want over 5, certainly. And so if you get somebody that is going to perform at a higher level, are we going to step in and trip them? It's like, hey, back down to that 5-minute mile. And
making everybody else look bad. Right?
And in some ways, we do that with the management processes that we put in place. Mm-hmm. We tell people, here is the best way for everybody to do something. Well, John, you and I know that we could go achieve the very same thing and we're going to do it a little differently. We have different experiences, different approaches. We're different physicality. Right. There's all kinds of things.
I'm in much better shape. I'm just kidding.
And you're younger, and I guarantee you're faster.
I'm in much worse shape.
Yeah, it's like, I could be running full speed, which wouldn't be fast,
but
I'd be running full speed. And the thing is, when you cross the line ahead of me, I'm cheering for you, and you're turning around and just going, Mike, that was full speed. Good all out, man.
Yeah.
And I think we miss that. So we measure and we orchestrate off of the activity, and we need to flip to what's the objective? Like, what are the outcomes we're looking at? And when we can believe that the people working with us, for us, truly understand what that finish line is, what the objective is, and we allow them to grow and discover and explore on their way to get there, they're gonna do better the following year. Instead, we manage their activity to the T. We tell them it's a 5-minute mile and the reason it's a 5-minute mile.
Do many that, yeah.
Yeah. Off of each lap, I want you to log in and record that stuff, because next week we're gonna sit and talk about it.
Yeah. It is a very challenging for a manager or a middle manager that then has to go report up, right? I mean they're held accountable to the numbers, and so they need the numbers from their people. It's almost a sick cycle in some way. But there's one question that I really wanted to dig in and ask you about, which is, I saw something that said, we don't want an old school leadership speaker. We don't want people talking about stuff that was in the 50s. We want someone that's talking about leadership in 2025.
Yeah.
My question to you is, which I think is kind of a hokey question, but I'm going to offer it in a different way, which is, how is leadership changing today? You've been in business a long time. You've been around a lot of companies. Where do you see leadership changing the most? And what do leaders need to be most aware of to lead successfully in the next 5 years?
Yeah, not a hokey question at all. I assure you the answer could be hokey.
Yeah.
The question is a fabulous question. I do have a strong belief on this. And I just said the word that drives that is, I believe that what is beyond leadership is believership. And I think that when we take a look at all the various leaders that have had success in their organizations, they were not the same. There are not the 7 traits or the 10 lists of things or the 5 beliefs or the 8 of this or that. Mm-hmm. There's, but each of those unique individuals went at their objectives with their beliefs. And I think the ones that were most successful are those that had the most believers going with them. They saw the same endpoint. They saw the same vision. They were investing themselves into that activity, into that performance, because they believed in what they were chasing. The leadership that we talk about so often is this common orchestration, and how can we find the one thing to give to everybody? So to say, what does it look like in the future that will be different? There's not the one way to be a general and lead the troops. There are many different successful ways to lead. The principles have to be there. And I think mm-hmm. what we'll find, John, is we're going to identify the qualities of people that really create that leadership, rather than skill-based leadership where we think we can put we can just pour it into the cup. I think what we need to do is let those qualities develop in people. Therefore, this is my answer to that. With believership, with the leadership of the future, we will see more people have an opportunity to step into it, because it won't be limited to a single vision of what a leader is. It won't be a finite set of skills that we're either picking out of the crowd or pouring into the cup. There'll be a greater understanding, a broader definition. More people will rise up into that. So then the success of that means that we're picking, our leaders are growing and emerging out of a greater pool of candidates than today.
It's an interesting concept.
It's not a common one, John.
Well, I don't think it's, you know, I think you could say the same, as someone that's in this space every single day. I think you could say the same about the term leadership, right? If the term leadership is accurately defined, you could say we need more people that are doing that. And by its very nature, then we're going to have a larger pool to pick from and more people to step into it, because they know it's not about them, but it's about others. And so lots of people can go do that. So I think whether you end up calling it leadership or believership or whatever those terms might be, I think the interesting part to me is less the terminology and more the fact that, there's, not to play devil's advocate, but there, I've never seen a speed and a pace that organizations are moving at faster than they are today in the environments that they work in. And so it almost requires the people that are quote unquote leading, which it could be anybody, but
yes.
But the people that are leading in those environments to be nimble, to be flexible, to be lifting other people up so they can handle those decisions. So it's because one person can't make it.
Right.
And so I think that's where it gets really interesting, that and to use your example earlier about your kids and millennials, I think one of the biggest areas that it's changing, Mike, is in the past, leaders didn't have to explain why.
Right.
They really didn't. It was like, here's the decision. This is where we're going. You're either on the bus or you're off the bus. If not, go work somewhere else, you know?
Yes.
And I think that's changing a lot. I think leaders today are required to say why. And I have no problem with it. I actually think millennials, Gen Z, anybody kind of deserves to know why we're doing it.
That's a great point.
And I think that's a big part that's changed in leadership. Not to steal your answer. I was thinking about it.
It isn't, and it's great. It fits right in that, yeah. John. And it isn't nomenclature, right? So the leader, we need leaders. We need more diversity in our leaders, right? We need to find, instead of a set of finite skills that we identify and pick from, it really is understanding the human qualities of those people that influence and draw others mm-hmm. down the path.
Yeah.
And to let those people emerge. And obviously, it's why I have the passion. It's why we're having this conversation. Yeah. It's why I love your work so much, John, is we need to understand that opportunity so we can invest properly in giving people the opportunity to discover that, to learn. our learning and development programs right now are all skill-based. It's like the whole focus has been, can you put it on a job description and can you put it on a resume? And when we get those two things to match, and these are qualities that do not show up on a job description. Yeah. I've seen job descriptions. I've never seen a job description that identifies a leader. I've seen a great business orchestrator, a manager of business orchestration. And then they throw some nice words down there that they could never interview you for. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen a resume that says, these are the skills of a leader.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
I've seen results.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to put you on the spot. What's a question that could be asked in the interview process to determine whether that person has the heart for leadership?
Tell me about the relationships you have with the people you work with.
It's a good one.
And then I would do this. I would stay silent like that. For this reason, we get to understand that explainer style that they have. Mm-hmm. We're going to quickly identify if they have that victim mindset. Mm-hmm. Oh, it would have worked, but it was somebody else's fault, right? And I don't know if any of us played sports. We've all got an I got screwed story, right? And I know in all the years when
damn
I was hiring, when I was hiring people onto my teams, it's just like, so tell me what was going on there. And as soon as you would hear stories about all these other people and the fault and the bad company and all that, it's like, yeah, I was really looking for somebody that would really take ownership of it. There were some challenges, and this is the way we faced it. The relationship.
That's what I learned from it, and this is how I'm going to do it better this time.
Yeah.
It's a great question, and I appreciate you sharing it because, you know, I think part of the battle is just getting the right, you know, once you get the right people, we know we can grow and we can get better and we can develop. And if we can get people on a team that believe that, that want to go in the same direction and want to make a big impact, like the possibilities are endless.
Yes.
And sometimes just the right questions in the interview process is half the battle. Where can people learn more about your work? I know that you have the Humans First Club. You have a brand new online program called humansfirstplayground.com that's coming out. Tell us more where people can find out about the work that you're doing and how they can get involved.
Thank you. You know, the Humans First Club is a consortium of volunteers. I welcome you into that, John, because it really is a lot of like-hearted people that believe we can do better. And however we bring that forward, there's going to be many different ramps and doorways, and I invite them all in. It's all of us together. And that's at humansfirst.club.
Humansfirst.club.
The work that I do is through mjvacanti.com. Okay. That's where I do my consulting and my workshops and speaking. I like to get out in front of groups and bring new ideas in. Let's have a discussion. If everything was perfect and we had it solved, I would step aside. I think I step in with hope that tomorrow can be better. And there's a lot of great people that I've met, including you, thank you for having me, that can make that movement, that can put the right energy and investment into allowing that to happen. That's my mjvacanti.com work. I'm on social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah, we'll definitely link to the right places.
The humansfirstplayground.com is launching at the end of the week, and what I wanted to do is, with all the lessons of the Humans First, and now that there's hundreds of people that have attended these events across the country, and thousands all over the world who have said, please come to our city, our country. We're on calls on Friday. There were, you know, 7 countries and 4 continents represented on this call at noon. And so the demand is there, and I wanted to be able to create a platform that we could just explore and learn from each other and network and connect. And so I called it the playground because that's more the focus. There's good business to be done. There's formal work and training that I think is really important to bring to companies. I wanted this to just be a place to, like, go hang out in the monkey bars and have mm-hmm. some fun.
Cool. Well, we'll make sure to link to the right place. I know there's a lot of professionals listening that hope that their organization gets more human. And it's an important aspect of business and life and leadership. And so we're appreciative of the work that you're doing, and we appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
This has just been awesome. I'm so happy, and it's a pleasure, John. Thank you.
I told you this show was good. I mean, that guy is just something else. I'm so glad you got the opportunity to learn from him, as did I. If you like this show, please share it with a friend, a colleague. Let's spread the message of leadership and General Caslin's incredible example as well. So do me a favor, if you haven't already, leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, be a great leader at work and at home.